The following presentation is brought to you from the supporters of the Church of the Sovereign God.
No one nor anything can compare to God in His might and majesty. No other can speak and bring all physical and spiritual things into existence. No other can create living beings from nothing. And no other can declare what will happen before it takes place. That is, no other except God, Father and Son. And this ability to declare what will happen before it takes place is called prophecy. And prophecy reveals God's greatness and power. I mean, when you really stop and you really think about it, the kind of power that shows that He is able to reveal the future. So, when rightly understood, prophecy reveals who and what God is. In one sense, prophecy could be viewed as God exercising His creative power in foretelling the future and then bringing it to pass. The when, the where, and the how He sees fit for it to take place. Therefore, we could state that prophecy reveals that God exists. It also reveals that the Bible is His revealed word, because that's where He has His prophecies recorded for us to be able to take a look at. Now, with this in mind, would you please go with me to the book of Isaiah 44. Isaiah 44, beginning in verse 6, and we're going to read this from the New International Version. Isaiah 44, verse 6. This is what the Lord says, Israel's King and Redeemer, the Lord Almighty. I am the first and I am the last. Apart from me, there is no God. Who then is like me? Let him proclaim it. Let him declare and lay out before me what has happened since I established my ancient people and what is yet to come. Yes, let them foretell what will come. Do not tremble. Do not be afraid. Did I not proclaim and foretell it long ago? You are my witnesses. Is there any God besides me? No, there is no other rock. I know not one. Our loving God is so sure of what He foretells well in advance, but that it's going to happen, that He has put it in writing well, long time before it even takes place, so that it can be easily disproved if it does not come to pass. Yet, having stated that time and time and time again, what He has written has taken place, just as He proclaimed and foretold that it would. Over in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 33, God tells us why He revealed the future to His servants, and He also shows us here why He instructed them to write it down. So go with me to the book of Ezekiel 33, and we're going to read one verse, verse 33. We don't always need a lot of verses to back up statements that God has made proclaiming who and what He is. Ezekiel 33 and verse 33. And when this comes to pass, lo, it will come, because He says it's going to happen, then shall they know that a prophet has been among them. So you see, brethren, not only can God reveal the future well ahead of time, He can also bring it to pass what He has foretold. Because you see, brethren, prophecy also shows that God is ultimately in charge. Then, back again into the book of Isaiah, this time in chapter 46, he explains very clearly and declares that no one or no thing can approach his power. And we need to understand that prophecy is an example of his awesome power. Isaiah 46, again in the New International Version, verse 9, Isaiah 46 and verse 9. Remember the former things, those of long ago. I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me. I make known the end from the beginning, from ancient times, what is still to come. My purpose will stand and I will do all that I please. This is pretty bold to state, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen way down there, and there is nobody else that can do this. I'm it. And he is it. And he has done this over and over and over. So, brethren, I want us to understand, I should be very, very clear to everyone. However, we also know very clearly that is not known to everyone, but that is that only God can do what is described here in these verses. No one else can do that. No one else can do that. No one else can make this. Although they can make the claim, but we also know that it would not be true. So with this in mind, I'd like for us to take a look at this topic today of prophecy. I'll give you the title, End Time Prophecies, Part 1. You know, I didn't tell you how many parts there were going to be, did I? But End Time Prophecies, this is part one. I would think that probably every generation from Jesus' death and resurrection thought that Jesus would return in their lifetime. I mean, even Jesus' apostles thought that very thing by a statement that they made to him the very day that he ascended into heaven, which was 10 days before the day of Pentecost, as recorded in Acts chapter 2. But I want you to go with me to Acts chapter 1 and verse 6, and I'll show you what I'm talking about. Acts chapter 1 and verse 6. When they therefore were come together, they asked of him, saying, Lord, will you at this time restore again the kingdom of Israel? That's what they're asking him. You know, they didn't understand. Of course, and we know that they were wrong, because that wasn't what was going to happen. But that's what they thought, that his return. He's going away, but he's going to come right back. Because you see, on the day of his resurrection, he went away and he came right back. So they were not even so sure that he was not going to go away, but come immediately back and fulfill all of these things. And of course, we know they were wrong. Also, we know that there are many people alive today who think that Jesus' return is about to happen. It is imminent. It's right on the horizon. It's going to happen at any time. And clearly, the Bible does contain some prophecies that could not have been fulfilled until this generation, our generation today. Jesus made the statement, but when these signs become evident, his return would occur. And I'm taking some license and stating it this way, because it's not exactly what he says, but that certainly is what the sense of it is, that he says that when these signs of events are going to take place, it will be within one generation. Shortly before his death and resurrection, Jesus delivered to his disciples a major prophecy of end-time events. It is recorded in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. So, if you would, please go with me to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. This is where his disciples ask him a very interesting question. In verse 3, Matthew 24, verse 3, "And as he sat up on the Mount of Olives, his disciples came unto him privately." So this is in what is called the Sermon on the Mount. They came to, this is not the Sermon on the Mount, but I'm sorry, I misspoke there. But they came to him privately and telling him, or saying unto him, or asking him, which is probably a lot better way of stating this, number one, when will these things be? Number two, and what shall be the sign of your coming? And number three, what is the signs of the end of the world? That's three different questions. And I love the scriptures, and I've told you this before, when they ask Jesus a question and then he answers them. Because he answers them. And he replies with a description of conditions and events that would lead up to his second coming. He also said that when these signs become evident, his return would occur, as already said, within one generation or within that generation. So go with me to Matthew 24 and verse 34. Matthew 24, 34. "Verily I say unto you, this generation..." Now you have to read all of the verses from 3 all the way down through to see what all is taking place. Well, I'm not looking at that aspect. So I'm kind of looking toward the end of it here in Matthew 24 and verse 34. And he says, "This generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled." And that's why I use the statement, once all of these things are ready to be fulfilled and all these things could happen, it's going to happen in this one generation, because he says this generation that's alive at the time. So my question to us is, could our generation be that generation? Well, we're going to try and answer that through the end of this sermon. Brethren, throughout the nearly 2,000 years since Jesus gave this prophecy, many things have happened and many have thought that theirs was the time of his return. I think I can show you, I'm not going to, but I think I can show you where Peter thought that it was going to happen. Paul certainly thought it, that it was going to happen, and we know that it didn't. Yet, interestingly, there are a number of Bible prophecies that could not be fulfilled until our generation. So I go back and ask, are we that generation that Jesus is speaking about? So I want us to look today at some of these prophecies. This is why I'm calling it part one, because we're only going to look at probably a couple of these prophecies today that could not have occurred until this generation that we're now in. It could not have happened until this generation. So I want to look at a couple of those. And like I said, that makes it part one. So the first one, number one, is the human race would have the ability to exterminate itself. Every man, woman, and child could totally wipe themselves off of the face of the earth. That could not have happened in prior generations, not the way that it can happen now. Now, I know that, you know, whenever there was just a handful of people on the earth, they could have all killed each other and it would have been done. I understand that. That's not what I'm talking about. That's not what Jesus is talking about. You have to look at Matthew 24 to see all of those events that are taking place whenever he says, when all of these things are fulfilled, they're done, and this generation shall all of these things take place. So that's what I'm referring to here. So here in Matthew 24, while he is describing world conditions prior to his second return, Jesus made other interesting statements. Matthew 24, go up to verse 22. "And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." Now, that's a King James, and I'm reading primarily out of the King James, unless I tell you otherwise. But I want to read it to you now out of the Revised English Bible. in that day of troubles were not, if those day, if, let me start, if that time of troubles were not cut short, no living thing could survive. But for the sake of God's chosen, it will be cut short. I think that makes it very plain. I think that we could make the case for stating that the main message that Jesus brought was that he was having them look forward to the coming kingdom of God, because he was talking about his return. What's going to be the end of all of this and the time of your coming? So that's where he's focusing them to. The purpose of his going away and then coming back is to establish the kingdom of God on earth. So that's where he's focusing their attention. No argument. I don't think any of us should argue with that. We also understand that this is sometimes described as this message of getting to there. All of that is called the gospel. In fact, we're not going to, but if you read Mark 1 and verse 14, we know that the gospel means good news, because that's what it's talking about. Because he's declaring he went away to be tempted into the wilderness. He came back and he's coming back in and he's starting his ministry. And he's saying the kingdom of God is at hand. Now, it's at least 2,000 years from that point forward and hasn't come yet. But he also told them, and all of these things have got to take place, and when they're ready to take place, then it's there. Then it's there. And so we can see it in that way. And while some of the prophecies concerning events prior to the establishment of the kingdom of God can seem to be rather negative, brethren, we should always keep in mind that a major focus of Bible prophecy is that this good news of God's coming kingdom is going to be a relief and a release of all of this bad stuff. So he's telling you, what is it going to be like? Go back to the original question that they asked him, 3 points. And he said, what is it going to be like then? And he says, okay, I'm going to answer your question. All of this stuff, all of these things are going to take place before this comes to about. This is what this is talking about. This is what we're focusing on today. And yeah, there's a lot of negative things, but the end result of it is the kingdom of God, which is the last part of the plan of salvation for all of mankind. So this is a very positive thing. So I think that we can see from Matthew 24 and verse 22, if Jesus does not intervene in world affairs, the whole human race will be dead. That's not real good news. But he also says, that's a prophecy that is going to take place by the end of this age, by this age, by this generation, when all of these things are taking place. This is what he's focusing on. Remember his question that he's answering to the disciples. By the time all of these things come to the place, every man, woman, and child could be wiped out, except for the fact that God the Father and God the Son are going to intervene and cut it short because of the church. I think it's also very interesting for us to know that humanity has had the capacity to self-annihilate itself only for a little more than about 50 years or so. Not going to ask for a show of hands, but how many of us are around that age, somewhere in there? So it's been in our lifetime. This is the point. This is the whole point that I'm making. Because you see, it wasn't until the time that the United States and the Soviet Union developed and stockpiled hydrogen bombs. Like I said, when it was just a handful of people, they could have taken bricks and stones and kill one another, and I understand where every person would have been killed, but that's not the focus whenever you read Matthew 24 of what he's answering to these people's questions. All of these things have got to take place. So it's got to have been a lot of things going on. And so he's talking about one time. And that's within about 50 years or so. Don't try and pin me down to an exact time. I'm saying or so. So as a result of this, the world had to live with what became known as mutually assured destruction. In other words, the world came to the place that we knew that you've got two superpowers that could wipe out every man, woman, and child. And we lived under that. And I've had people who are of a younger generation and say, well, what was all the puff and why were all these bomb shelters made, and why did schools, and whenever you guys were in elementary schools, you used to practice bomb drills? And I don't know if some of you in the congregation here are young enough to remember that that ever happened in your schools, but it happened in my schools when I was young. We used to practice bomb drills by crawling under our desk because there was this real threat that it could happen. The reason that there was the threat that it could happen was because it could have happened, and it never could have happened before. That's the point, and that's the point that Jesus is talking about. That's the point that I'm trying to make here. And it was at that time there was only three nuclear powers. The United States, Soviet Union, and Britain was the third one. And then by the middle of the 1960s, France and China had joined this nuclear, shall we call it a nuclear club. And so more people had the bomb. And so the threat could have been bigger. I remember that I was in the church used to have what they call spokesman's club. And there was a man in the club, and he was sitting right next to me, and the question was asked by the topics master, and it says, China has just got the bomb. Do any of you believe that they actually would drop it or could actually drop it, was the question. I mean, this is back in the 60s. You know, we wouldn't even ask this question now. If they were threatened enough, yeah, they could probably do it. Okay. But the question was asked, and other people that, no, they're not going to do it because of this. No, they got not to do it because of that. And this man sitting right beside me, he raises his hand and he gets up and he says, his answer to the question was, the price of a life in China is $27. And he sat down. Later, the director, the church pastor, gets up and he's evaluated and he says, Mr. So-and-so, would you explain that? Nobody else said another word about that question because they didn't know how to comment to what he had said. And he said, would you comment to this? And he said, sure. He said, I fought in the China wars. He said, you could have anyone assassinated for $27. Of course they'll drop the bomb. Wow. This is a threat that we grew up under. Never could have happened before. Could happen. Today there are at least eight nations that have nuclear warheads, and that number seems to be set to increase with the nuclear arms race in the Middle East. And all of this is significant, and I don't think a lot of people in church pay a whole lot of attention to all of this because they don't think about the background and when all of this started and what does this mean from a prophetic point of view. It's really, really important to see this and to grasp this and to understand this. And of course, the more nuclear powers we have in the world, the more likely it is that someone would use this awful, deadly force for their own personal agenda, for their own purposes. And brethren, although international attention has been focused within the past short time on the nuclear bombs or programs or whatever term we would want to use here on North Korea and Iran during these past few years or so, really little attention has been given to the possibility of some or all of Pakistan's nuclear arsenal falling into the hands of some radical Islamists. Now, I know I'm stepping out there and making that statement. Now, during this ongoing crisis in Pakistan, the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda and their supporters have steadily gained more and more territory, more and more power, more and more monies, and more influence, making nuclear terrorism more likely. I mean, all you got to do is just imagine with me for a moment. Before his death, what if somebody like Osama bin Laden had gotten hold of Pakistan's arsenals? What do you think could have happened? Do you think someone like that would be willing to drop the bomb? I would think we would be naive to think otherwise. And so, yeah, the threat is there, and it's imminent because it's what Jesus said. When all of these can take place, then that generation is not going to pass until they've all come about. This is the first time, really, in history that it could have ever happened. It's in this generation. And in the meantime, Russia and China are both flexing their military muscle, raising fears in many different areas and parts of the world. And there is good news. With having said all of that, there is still good news. And the good news is that for all of us as believers, we have an assurance that Jesus will intervene to save mankind from self-annihilation before it happens. That's what he said, Matthew 24 and verse 22. It could happen, but before that happens, he's going to intervene. This prophecy could not be fulfilled until mankind had the potential for self-extinction through weapons of mass destruction. So again, we see that only in the last 50 or so years has this become possible. And that's one of the answers that he gave to their question. He says, what is it going to be the sign of your coming and at the end of the world? What are going to be those signs? And so he's giving them the answers. And this is one of the signs that he says. And in this generation, what generation? The generation when this is possible. Was it possible before this generation? That still doesn't make it be that it's going to happen in this generation. But it, at least it is there. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about another prophecy. I've questioned myself in several ways of making this statement for this point, but I've come to this conclusion. A Jewish homeland had to be reestablished in the Middle East. Now, I know that a lot of the Protestant churches, they talk about, you know, when they went back, all of these prophecies were fulfilled. No, they were not. They were not. But that had to happen. And I can, we'll show you why that statement is true. And it has to do with things that were stated in these three different books where Jesus is answering the disciples' question. Please understand, from a geopolitical point of view, the center focus of end time events is Jerusalem and the surrounding areas. If we don't realize that, we cannot really understand end time prophecies basically at all. And you can't look at news and really get the right information or a lot of information because I know, I mean, I've watched news for years myself, and there are many, many times that the words Middle East or Jerusalem or Israel are never mentioned. And it's the focus. It's the focus. but I can tell you what this pop star did, and this one was arrested, and this one did that, but I can't tell you what's happening in these places because the news programs don't inform us. Because they don't know what to look for. Well, they do. They look for things that's going to build their ratings, and I understand that. And focusing on Israel is not going to do it. But that's where we need to be focused. We know that Luke 21 is a parallel account to Matthew 24. I've already told you that Mark 13. But I want us to notice the same wording that Jesus in Luke 21 that he gave in this parallel account to Matthew 24. So go with me to Luke 21 in verse 7. And I'm kind of skipping some of the words here, but you'll follow with me. Luke 21 in verse 7. Teacher, when will these things be, and what sign will be there when these things are about to take place? And then Jesus, his reply was that Jerusalem would be the center focus of the political and military unrest and troubles that would immediately precede his return. Luke 21 and verse 20. Luke 21 and verse 20. And when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Verse 22, for these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. And I know that people come back because I've actually made these kinds of statements to people in conversations, and they go, wait a minute, Jerusalem's always been compassed around with armies. Go ahead and think that, and we'll see you on the other side of the resurrection, because you're blinded to what it is actually telling us and what is actually going on. You have to go back and see some of the history of Jerusalem to be able to understand these things. These words that we just read would have been basically impossible to comprehend by anyone living 50 to 60 years ago. We read the prophecies. I was in the church more than 50 years ago. And we heard prophecy sermons about this, but we were talking about way down there. Because we didn't see these things because they were not really that imminent. It was always the possibility, but you couldn't really talk to the guy on the street and ask him these questions and he would come to that. Today you might have the average Joe or Sue or Sally on the street may actually agree with you that it could happen now. Jerusalem in ancient times had been fought over hundreds of times, and yet for some period of about 400 years, beginning in around 1517, Jerusalem for about 400 years was in peace because it was part of the Ottoman Empire. The Jews who were living there were a minority under this Turkish rule. However, this was going to change, and it was going to change dramatically, and it changed during the 20th century. And the reason that it was going to change was because it had to change to fulfill the Bible prophecy that was going to take place. Jesus had already declared this some 2,000 years ago, what's going to happen. And this is where you need to look to, and this is what's going to happen. And yet, that's not what it looked like for all these years. Even though Jerusalem was fought over different people, this group, this group, this group, more wars in that little tiny area than any other war in any of the wars in any place on the world. But then for over 400 years, from 1517 or so for the next 400 years. They were in peace. Tell somebody back then this prophecy is going to happen in Jerusalem has to be a major part in it. They would have thought you were crazy. Zechariah the prophet was used to be by God to reveal a great deal of information about end time events and the second coming of Messiah. Zechariah lived and prophesied more than 500 years before Jesus' first coming. And yet, his prophecies tell us a great deal about our world today. Go with me to Zechariah 12. Zechariah 12, verse 1. I'm going to read this from the New King James Version. The A part of the verse, the burden of the word of the Lord against Israel. Verse 2. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall happen in that day, in the day that the siege is there, is what he's referring to, that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples. All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces. Though all nations of the earth are gathered against it. Verse 9, and it shall be in that day. That is what is called a prophetic sign. And it's referring to the end of the age, what Jesus was referring to in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. That's that time, and this is what Zechariah is talking about in that day. And in that day, that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. All this is prophetic, and it's at the end of the time. Because over the years, I said, more wars have been fought over that little piece of territory than any other single piece of territory in the whole world. Yet, all the nations that have come against it, they're not destroyed. But he says he's going to. So it's an end time prophecy. When you read through these verses, we could possibly think that they were applying to ancient events since Jerusalem has been fought over repeatedly down through the times, down through the ages, more wars than any other time. However, continue on in this book, and chapter 14 makes it very clear that this is not talking about past events, it is talking about future events. The time setting is immediately before Jesus' return. And like I said, he wrote some 500 years more, a little more than 500 years before Jesus came the first time. And he's describing the second coming. Zechariah 14 in verse 1, still the New King James, first part of A1. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming. Verse 2. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravished. Half of the city shall go into captivity. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. And in that day, again, another prophetic sign, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives will be split in two. I've stood on the Mount of Olives. It's not split in two. So it didn't happen at his first coming. So we know it's yet another event. Of course, I know you know that, but I mean, I've actually been there and saw it. It's not split in two. But it's going to be, and that's a future event. From east to the west, making a very large valley, half of the mountain shall move toward the north, and half of it shall move toward the south. clearly these last verses here, last lines of this prophecy, remain to be fulfilled. Then, in verse 16, not going to read it, but in verse 16, we read of how those nations that came against Jerusalem will have to go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, Jesus Christ, for the Feast of Tabernacles. That's not happened. That's not happened. So I think that we can see these chapters of Zechariah are a prophecy about the events that precede and include the second coming of Jesus Christ. I think that we might be able to say that a Jewish-controlled Jerusalem is the center-focused. Now, let me explain what I mean. Shortly before Zechariah the prophet wrote, the prophet Daniel wrote about the Jews' daily sacrifices being cut off in the end times. Now, you can see this more through Daniel 12, verses 1 through 13. And this is an event that had a forerunner when the temple was defiled by the Assyrian ruler Antiochus Epiphanes the IV in the 2nd century B.C., around 165 B.C. There's a lot of story, the Maccabeans and all of that come into play at that time. So go with me to Daniel 12 and verse 11. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. I'm not focusing on that. I'm focusing on the daily sacrifice. Because what we also see, however, is that Jesus shows us and actually confirms that this is a future event to precede his return. I want to compare Daniel 11, verse 31, with Matthew 24 and verse 15. So we're going to read those two verses. Daniel 11, 31. And the arm shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and they shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that makes desolate. Okay, now go to Matthew 24 and verse 15. This is the book where we're getting our prophecies for end time prophecies. Verse 15. When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whoso reads, let him understand. And so right there, if you're looking at this, you would go, okay, so I'm going to stop here, go back and read what Daniel said. So we could go back now and reread what Daniel said. Because that's what Jesus said, when you see this taking place. Now let's continue here in Matthew 24 and verse 21. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Matthew 24, verse 22. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. So if this was fulfilled in the days of Antiochus Epiphanes, what days were cut short? So Jesus is saying, go back and read it. So Daniel was not talking about that event that was going to take place at 165 B.C. He was referring to the one at the end of the time. Giving in written form Jesus some of his information to answer the disciples' questions in Matthew 24. This is what it's going to look like. So this means that those sacrifices must first be reinstated, and it would have to be in Jerusalem because the Jews would be doing it and there's no place else they would do it. Therefore, this would require somewhat of a Jewish rule over the city. And I was there And there is no way that right at this time they can do that. They can sneak around and do these things because they are of the opinion, and Jesus doesn't say it has to take place on the Temple Mount, but their view is it has to take place on the Temple Mount, and there's no way they can do any sacrifice there. So there has to be even yet some changes. That's my point. There has to be something that's got to even change from where it is today, even though all of these things can take place in this generation. There still has to be some changes. I'm not implying that I know what the changes are. I'm not even going to offer any possibilities because I don't know. I just read the scriptures. Brother, anything like this would have been hard to even imagine 100 years ago because of the simple reason that no independent Jewish political entity even existed in the Middle East. In 66 A.D. and again in 132 A.D., the Jews in Jerusalem rebelled against the Roman Empire, and Judah was basically crushed. And the remaining Jews that fled, that got away, they went into all kinds of places. But the ones who didn't get away by the Roman Empire, they took them and they scattered them throughout the Roman Empire and even into beyond in other places in the world. And of course, many of us know that no Jewish homeland existed again until 1948. And it's simply called today the State of Israel. Yet since then, this tiny little State of Israel has had to fight wars for survival. Even after it was established in 1948, they had to go to war. And then again in 1967, and then in 1973. And it continues to suffer all kinds of countless terrorist attacks and threats of annihilation from hostile neighbors determined to eliminate the Jewish state and the Jewish people totally, completely. They have neighbors who's stating those people should not even exist, must let a state of Israel. So that's what they're facing there today. So I want us to realize that here is a prophecy that can now be fulfilled in our time. It can happen because all the pieces are actually in place. I don't know what it's going to take for them to be able to start the daily sacrifice because Jesus says, look back at Daniel, and Daniel says it stops when the daily sacrifice stops, which just means it's got to start. And like I've said before, it could take place once and it started and stopped. It could be that quickly over. So it could be fulfilled in our time, in this generation. Now, what about other prophecies like the King of the North and the King of the South? Well, this is where we're going to end part one of the end time prophecies. We're going to look at some of these other prophecies in part two, and I don't know whether there will be a part three. I have the material. I have the information that I could already do a part two, but we don't have the time for it at this point. So what I'm asking is for us all to keep our eyes and our attention on the Middle East. You have to go beyond the normal news sources. If they cover anything about it, most of it is going to be negative. And I'm sorry that's true. But that's where our focus has to be when it comes to looking for end time prophecies. When is Jesus going to return? See, because Jesus told us, pray, thy kingdom come. So what we're praying for is the Feast of Trumpets to be fulfilled, because that's when Jesus returns. That's the picture. Jesus returns then. So he told us to pray for that period of time. There are still things that have to take place beforehand. And they can take place in this generation. So now is not the time for sleeping. Now is the time to awake ourselves up and pay attention to what is going on. Prophecy is not just to give information that's going to happen. It's actually a warning to the world, and it is a warning to the church. They don't know it. We do. What are we going to do about it? Is it going to wake us up, or is it going to go, oh, ho-hum, we've read this before? No, our eyes and our attention has to be on the Middle East. After all, this is the major area of what is ahead for end-time prophecies and the return of Jesus Christ, which we are told to be praying for. The Aaronic blessing. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speaking to Aaron and to his sons, saying, on this wise you shall bless the children of Israel, saying unto them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And they shall put my name upon the children of Israel, and I will bless them. God bless each one of you, brother. He already has, and I ask the blessings of eyes to see, and the attention to pay it, and the alertness to see what is going on as we look for the fulfillment of all of these things. So God bless each one of you. Happy Sabbath.
For more information or answers to your Bible questions, please contact the Church of the Sovereign God. Our website is www.cotsg.org. That's www.cotsg.org. Or you may write to us at Post Office Box 89111. That's Post Office Box 89111, Tampa, Florida 33689.